Amateur Radio Newsline report number 1878 with release date of August the 9th, 2013 to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Scientists say the sun's magnetic poles are about to reverse. Hams in India again respond as monsoon rains bring landslides. A Florida man is electrocuted while installing an antenna. Louisiana adopts the Alert FM public warning system. And guess who's not going to retire from ham radio teaching? Find out the answer on Amateur Radio Newsline report number 1878, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, here is Jim Davis, W2JKD.
According to measurements from NASA-supported observatories, the sun's vast magnetic field is about to turn over. Amateur Radio Newsline's Heather Emby, KB3TZD, has the details.
The sun's magnetic field changes polarity approximately every 11 years. It happens at the peak of each solar cycle as our home star's inner magnetic field generator reorganizes itself, signaling the midpoint of a solar cycle. Todd Hoeksema is the director of Stanford's Wilcox Solar Observatory, which is one of the few that monitor the sun's polar magnetic fields. He says that we are no more than 3 to 4 months away from a complete field reversal and that this change will have ripple effects throughout the solar system. This is because of the fact that the domain of the sun's magnetic influence, also known as the heliosphere, extends billions of kilometers beyond the minor planet Pluto and almost to interstellar space. When solar physicists talk about solar field reversals, they are also referring to something known as the sun's current sheet. This is a sprawling surface jutting outward from its equator where its slowly rotating magnetic field induces an electrical current. During field reversals, the current sheet becomes very wavy. As Earth orbits the sun, it dips in and out of the current sheet. Transitions from one side to another can stir up stormy space weather around our planet, which in turn can affect radio propagation to some degree. As the field reversal approaches, data from the Wilcox Solar Observatory shows that the sun's two hemispheres are out of sync. According to solar physicist Phil Schnurr, the sun's north pole has already changed sign, while the south pole is racing to catch up. Soon both poles will be reversed, and the second or downhill half of the solar max will be underway. For ham radio, it likely means that good DX openings, especially on the higher bands, could be fewer and far in between. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Emby, KB3TZD, in Berwick, Pennsylvania.
You can read more about what's happening with Old Sol at tinyurl.com/solar-max-midpoint-here. Frequent updates are also on the web at sciencedaily.com. Hams in India are reportedly once again on the front lines. This is another series of heavy rains on August the 4th led to landslides hitting the high mountain range area of Idukki and the adjoining districts of Kerala. At airtime, 9 people have lost their lives and scores are reported missing from the monsoon-saturated areas. Word is that the ham radio response is centered on 7.080 megahertz with long-distance communications, with VHF being used within the storm-devastated region. Idukki is described as an agricultural area where most people operate small farms. Reports say that the region has suffered heavy crop and property loss due to the flooding. More information on the current situation is on the web now at tinyurl.com/more-india-flooding. A report by the United Kingdom Department of Cultural Media and Sport says that telecommunications regulator Ofcom's duties should expand to include the power to issue monetary penalties for breach of Wireless Telegraphy Act licenses. The report is titled Connectivity, Content, and Consumers, Britain's Digital Platform for Growth. It covers a number of issues related to the HF spectrum, including such items as spectrum management on and the already planned digital radio switchover. However, of greater interest is the Spectrum Management Impact Assessment document. It notes that the government's preferred option is to amend Ofcom's statutory duties to make possible dynamic spectrum access database licensing, incentive auctions, and to impose monetary penalties for breach of Wireless Telegraphy Act licenses. The report says that should a holder of spectrum breach the Wireless Telegraphy Act even in a minor way, Ofcom can currently only prosecute licensees or revoke their license. Now, such measures are often disproportionate to the offense. The report also suggests that it's time to introduce a system of penalties which provide appropriate incentives for compliance. This would essentially be similar to the authority that the FCC has here in the United States. A follow-up on last week's story on the destruction of the Rocky Ridge radio tower east of San Francisco, California. It's now been learned that the ham radio system on that tower belonged to the Mount Diablo Amateur Radio Club and was heavily trafficked on 144.390 MHz packet radio and the APRS digipeater. Jim Siemens, AF6PU, is the spokesman for the group. He says that the club's repeater committee has decided to move the digipeater, and the results were amazing.
This last Friday, Trevor Hall, WA6JU, was able to get into the vault at Rocky Ridge and retrieve all our digipeater gear. Early on Saturday morning, 7 o'clock, a group of us met to go up to the north peak of Mount Diablo to set up ATV gear. And while we were up there, Trevor was able to install and get up and running the digipeater. And the great news is that because of its higher vantage point, we are covering out almost 150 miles all the way around.
According to AF6PU, the new site should offer packet and APRS coverage to the majority of hams in Northern California. Meantime, police are still asking the public's assistance in finding the person or persons responsible for this act of vandalism. If you have any information that might help, please contact investigators at area code 510-881-1833. Some interesting DX news. Word that Roger Jones, ZS6RJ, and a multinational team of operators will be active as 3DA0ET, from Pig's Peak in Switzerland between November the 18th and the 27th. They plan to have four stations on the air, covering 160 through 10 meters, plus 6 meters using CW, single sideband, and RTTY. This operation will also include the CQ Worldwide DX CW contest that takes place this year from November 23rd through the 24th. According to the planner, Charles Frosty Frost, K5LBU, the team is still looking for operators, especially some skilled RTTY operators. If you're interested in joining this de-expedition, please contact ZS6RJ at roger.jones@votomail.com. More information on this upcoming operation is online now at swazidx.org.
I'm Bill Pasternak. WA6ITF with some late-breaking good news. It comes in words of congratulations to the Dayton Amateur Radio Association, this on the grand reopening of its clubhouse after some extensive renovation and expansion. On Friday, August 16th, from 4 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, the club members and the public are invited to preview the facilities that include a new lounge, a kitchenette, two new classrooms, and a boardroom, which have been wired with the latest video, audio, and smart boards projection gear. Current club president Ruben Meeks, WHGUC, and past president Don Dubon, N6JRL, will be hosting a ribbon-cutting ceremony at 5 p.m. and again at 7 p.m. Refreshments will be served. The Dayton Amateur Radio Association clubhouse is located at 6619 Bellefontaine Road in the Dayton suburb of Huber Heights, Ohio. For more information on this event, please email wd8aqi@gmail.com. Jim?
With you 52 weeks a year, every year since 1977. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the WB9 AER repeater serving Madison, Wisconsin. An Oakland Park, Florida man was electrocuted July 29th while trying to install an antenna for an unlicensed radio broadcast station on the roof of a small strip mall. According to the Broward County Sheriff's Office, 42-year-old Jean Rogelet Adolphance was reportedly climbing a tree at about 10:40 p.m. when the 30-foot antenna that was supporting came in contact with a high-voltage power line. His friend, Claybert Durand, who was helping him install the antenna, called 911. Officials said Aldofonts was trying to start a Creole language pirate station and that they found more broadcasting equipment in his vehicle. A new public alert system is coming to the state of Louisiana. Amateur Radio Newsline's Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, has details.
If there's ever another disaster like Hurricane Katrina, Louisiana will be in a far better position to advise its residents than back in August of 2005. This with the announcement by Louisiana's Office of Homeland Security and Emergency Preparedness that it has adopted the Alert FM system as a way of notifying the state's emergency managers in 64 parishes and 42 institutions of higher learning of an imminent threat to life or property. According to the release, Louisiana Senator Mary Landrieu was an early supporter of the broadcast-based emergency alert systems. She's quoted as saying that with Alert FM, Louisiana has implemented a reliable method of distributing life-saving information to its citizens. She added that the dependability of broadcast transmissions can make the difference between life and death during an emergency. As previously reported here on Newsline, Alert FM is an emergency notification system that delivers messages from state, local, and private sector officials to citizens, schools, businesses, and first responders using the Radio Data System, or RDS, subcarrier of local FM radio stations. Messages are originated by designated officials and are then transported from a secure web-based portal to the data subcarrier via GSSNet, which is a secure satellite data delivery system. These alerts and messages are then received by FM stations and retransmitted to Alert FM-equipped receivers or to cell phones that have both active FM chips and properly installed software. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, in New Orleans, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5TW.
More about the Alert FM system is online at alertfm.com. Apple has begun a worldwide program to replace third-party and counterfeit USB chargers for use with its iPhone, iPad, and iPod products. The After reports that a woman in China was electrocuted by a non-Apple charger. Apple said it would swap third-party chargers for an official replacement on payment of $10 or the equivalent fee in a local currency. The exchange program begins on August the 16th. It'll run through October the 18th. In mid-July, said it was investigating reports that Ma Allen was killed when she answered her iPhone while it was plugged into a wall charger. Investigators later said that her death was caused by a fake third-party non-Apple charger. No mention was made of the woman's death in the announcement of the trade-in program, but Apple did say that the initiative was prompted by safety issues. Apple also said that the third-party and fake chargers would be disposed of in an environmentally friendly way. You can read one of the many detailed stories on this Apple-initiated safety program at tinyurl.com/apple-charger-exchange. The FCC has proposed an $8,000 fine to the religious broadcaster Fellowship World, Inc., which is licensee of KFWO-FM. This for allegedly operating from a location other than the one it was authorized for. Stephen Kinford, NAWB, reports.
According to the commission, the non-commercial station was authorized to transmit at 89.7 MHz, Knowlesville, New York. Responding to a complaint in October 2012, an agent from the Enforcement Bureau, Philadelphia office, tracked the signal back to Fellowship Christian Center in Buffalo, some 36 miles from Knowlesville. The agent also took field strength measurements to determine if WFWO's power levels were low enough to operate under Part 15 of its rules. The FCC said in its decision that WFWO exceeded the maximum permitted for non-licensed devices and therefore required a license to operate. In his response, Fellowship President John Young told the commission the station stopped operating from the original transmitter site so the property owner could remove some trees around the antenna. John, who admitted the group was operating a 1-watt low-power transmitter on 89.7 MHz in Buffalo. The agent told Young to stop operating the 1-watt transmitter because it was overpowered for Part 15 operation and not at its authorized location. The FCC said Young agreed, and the agency followed up with a notice of unlicensed operation. It warned the licensee of a violation and that a fine could be imposed. But in November 2012, the director of engineering from a licensed station told the FCC that WFWO was once again transmitting again from the Buffalo location. An FCC Enforcement Bureau agent confirmed that it was on the air and inspected the facility. This time, Young claimed he was unaware the station was operational and alleged that his children must have turned on the transmitter. But in its imposing the penalty, the FCC said that while the base fine for this type of violation is $4,000, that it raised it to $8,000, saying the licensee's conduct in this case is egregious. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Stephen Kinford, NAWB, in Wadsworth, Ohio.
Fellowship World was given the customary 30 days from the imposition of the proposed fine to pay or to file an appeal. The FCC says that the Educational Media Foundation cannot have an FM translator in Los Angeles, California. in making its decision on the regulatory agency, said that the broadcaster had not proven that granting its application would not preclude future low-power FM licensing opportunities for it in that market. The Media Bureau had treated the Educational Media Foundation situation as a request for a waiver and said in its decision such waivers face a high hurdle. Audio Division Chief Peter Doyle noted that given the massive number of pending translator applications, the agency isn't going to conduct a case-by-case assessment of any one request. As reported last week, Bob Grove, WAJHD, founder, editor, and publisher of Monitoring Times magazine, has announced his and the magazine's retirement. Now, in a one-on-one video interview, Ham Radio Now's Gary Pierce, KN4AQ, finds out why Bob's retirement also means an end to the magazine. It's a very interesting conversation that will give you a lot of insight into Bob Grove's thinking and putting his popular magazine to bed. To find out, take your web browser to tinyurl.com/monitoring-times-says-goodbye. President Obama's nominee for chairman of the Federal Communications Commission is one step closer to that position. This with word that Thomas Wheeler has received the approval of the Senate committee for that position. It's now believed that a full Senate vote on Wheeler's nomination will take place shortly after Congress returns from its August recess. If approved, Wheeler will replace FCC Chairman Julius Genachowski, who retired from that position to join the Aspen Institute as a senior fellow. Before its recess, the United States Senate confirmed three new members to serve on the Broadcasting Board of Governors: Jeffrey Schell, Matthew C. Armstrong, and Ambassador Ryan C. Crocker were unanimously appointed to the bipartisan board. Schell was also confirmed as the chairman of the board. The board has been below quorum level for some time, but with the swearing-in of these members, it'll once again be at the full operational level. The 52nd Annual Antique Wireless Association World Convention is slated for August 20th through the 24th at the Rochester Institute of Technology Inn and Conference Center. The event will celebrate the grand opening of the new Antique Wireless Association Museum that takes place on August the 20th. More information on this event, take your web browser to antiquewireless.org/annual-convention. The next World Digital Amateur Television CUSO Party is on its way. The event, created by Peter Cossens, VK3BFG, in 2011, will begin on Friday, the 30th of August, and conclude on Saturday, the 31st, with scheduling all in Australian Eastern Standard Time. This CUSO Party will be initiated through the VK3RTV Melbourne Geelong repeater in Australia, linked with the California W6ATN network in the United States. It'll also include an online seminar by Ken Kanechi, W6HHC of the Orange County Amateur Radio Club, with an update on the DATV Express project. This is a digital fast-scan television system being developed by United States and British Hams. European presenters are yet to be confirmed. However, the CUSO party will be streamed online thanks to the British Amateur Television Club. If you're a ham interested in the world of digital video, this one-time event is one that you will not want to miss. Serving all of our hobby, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following radio amateur. Some enforcement of a different kind. This is a broadcaster down under is ordered to apologize for things he said on the air. Jim Meachin has the details.
A New Zealand radio station has been ordered to apologize on the air for abusing and insulting local councillors as well as a rival radio broadcaster. This after the nation's Broadcasting Standards Authority ruled that Cruise FM Waikato must express regret for unfair comments made about South Waikato District Council members, Classic Hits Radio and its staff in two broadcasts late last year. The Broadcasting Standards Authority found that while host and owner Johnny Dryden and another councillor were broadly discussing issues of public interest, their comments went beyond in what could be considered acceptable. Also, that they had the potential to be very damaging to the individual's reputations. The Broadcasting Standards Authority went on to note that Dryden made comments that were not related to their public or professional duties, but were personally abusive and insulting. Cruise FM has been ordered to pay the Crown $2,500 New Zealand dollars to cover its costs in the matter. It must broadcast an apology for the unfair treatment within a month. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jim Meachins at L2BHF on the South Island in Nelson, New Zealand.
Imagine if there was a board similar to the New Zealand Broadcasting Standards Authority here in the United States. If it were, it's likely there would be few edgy radio talk shows and no shock jocks on the air. A Japanese HTV-4 cargo vessel carrying a new ham TV gear was successfully launched to the International Space Station Saturday, August the 3rd. Once activated, the primary mission of Ham TV is to perform contacts between the astronauts on the ISS and school students by adding real-time video to their current voice-only QSO within the ARISS program. The European Space Agency's Columbia module on the ISS will host the 2.4 gigahertz video transmitting station in addition to the existing 2-meter FM amateur radio station. The new equipment can broadcast images from the ISS during the school contacts or other downlinks or pre-recorded video images up to 24 hours a day. The IARU Amateur Satellite Frequency Coordination Panel has announced frequencies of 2422.0 MHz and 2437 MHz for use by the Ham TV project. It's currently planned to transmit using the DVB-S signal format with 10 watts of power. A new record for registrations for this year's International Lighthouse and Lightship Weekend. This as it's announced that the milestone 400th registration went to Australia's Carpentaria CLS-4 Lightship, and there have been 49 more since then. The Carpentaria CLS-4 is a Scottish-designed and Australian-built lightship. It's moored at Australia's National Maritime Museum in Sydney's Darling Harbour. Word is that it'll be put on the air by the Hornsby and District Amateur Radio Club as station VK2MA for the International Lighthouse and Lightship event. It's also one of the 17 such vessels taking part in the International Lighthouse and Lightship Weekend that has so far attracted some 450 registered entities from around the world. Now, in its 16th year, International Lighthouse and Lightship Weekend was created to increase public awareness of the old form of maritime navigation, engender goodwill, and promote amateur radio. This year's event takes place on August the 17th and the 18th. More about it's on the web now at www.illw.org. A new 6-meter beacon has been set up on the 50.012.5 operating from the Gibraltar Amateur Radio Society's clubhouse on that British overseas territory. Located in Grid Square IM76-8D, the beacon is signing the call of ZB2SIX/B and running 5 watts output into a temporarily inverted V-dipole. QSN reports go to information found on QRZ.com. In DX, YT7AW and YT4RA will be active stroke 4-0 from Montenegro through August the 15th. Their operation will begin in Dur-Mitor National Park, followed by a seaside stopover and ending with a possible stop on Cerna Gora. QSLs go via their home call signs as shown on QRZ.com. Bill Moore, NC1L, at the ARRL Awards Desk reports that the 2013 T5TC operation from Somalia has been approved for DXCC credit. If you've had this rejected in a prior application, send a note to bmoore at ARRL.org to be placed on the list for an update to your record. DL7VOA will be active stroke EA8 from the Canary Islands through August the 17th. His is holiday style using CW and mainly during his nighttime evening shift. QSL via DL7VOA direct or via the Bureau. IK2OHG will be active as HC2IOH from Ecuador between August the 10th and September the 12th. This operation will be holiday style, 40 through 10 meters using CW, single sideband, and RTTY. QSL via his call sign, direct, via the Bureau, or electronically using Logbook of the World. Lastly, KF8UN is on the air from Tanzania as 5H3BB through August the 20th. He's there on a safari with his wife, K8FUN. Activity is possible 40 through 15 meters, but mostly 20 meters using sideband and some CW. QSL via his call sign, direct. And finally this week, the man who is possibly the world's best-known ham radio instructor says that he's not going to retire after all.
That's right. Gordo is not retiring from teaching, but rather I'm teaching Elmers and instructors and Scout Radio Merit Badge leaders how to do a ham radio class similar to the classes that I've done in the past for the past 44 years.
Of course, that's Gordon West, WB6NOA, who earlier this year had hinted that a change was coming in his life, and many saw that as a hint that he'd be pulling the plug. But West says he feels that it's time to take his years of accumulated knowledge and pass it on to the next generation of instructors, who will be people bringing new operators into the hobby over the next several decades. And from this came the idea of rounding out his career by teaching the teachers.
Teaching the teachers was a decision that I made when I saw that class sizes were continuing to remain strong, and I had other Elmers come over and sort of monitor, and then their classes blossomed. So I thought, why not teach the teachers and get more classes throughout the local area here in Southern Cal, as well as when I travel throughout the country, growing with some of the techniques I use. So beginning officially now, I'm going to be training the trainers rather than actually presenting classes for students.
West says that he plans to get this new educational project underway in just a couple of weeks.
We're going to hold our first instructor's class on October 5th here in Orange County, and we've already got about 25 signed up. And these are not necessarily ham radio instructors, but rather Elmers wanting to, representing their club, teach some ham radio classes like mine. Then I'll take this same technique and this same seminar, make it shorter, and present seminars at PacificCon coming up in October, the Midwest Convention in November, and other ham shows throughout the country, where I'll put on an hour or so on training the trainers.
The exact location of this first Train the Trainers mission will be at the Muth Interpretive Center, 2301 University Drive, Newport Beach, California. The class will begin at 8 a.m. and end at 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Each instructor will receive the 40-page instructor teaching guide that gives step-by-step directions on teaching the new technician class materials. Those planning to attend are encouraged to download this free guide ahead of time at www.haminstructor.com. Lastly, more information on Gordon West's plan to train the next generation of ham radio educators can be found on his website at www.gordonwestradioschool.com. Just click on the tab marked Ham Instructors, and lest we forget, Gordon West Radio School is spelled all as one word. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, the CGC Communicator, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the Southgate News, Twit TV, and Australia's WIA News. That's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, at the editor's desk, I'm Jim Davis, W2JKD, on Florida's Treasure Coast, saying 73, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2013, all rights are reserved.